to only my left pinky finger. I suffered from chronic yeast and bacterial infections, which are now gone completely. The hair on my face from the PCOS-related hirsutism is disappearing, and what's left is finer and softer. The hair on my head is softer and naturally oiled instead of dry and flaking. I have a smaller waistline and a nicer butt. Well, so says my husband. My period has returned on time each month starting at the beginning of July, just 2 months after I began the fasting regimen. My blood pressure dropped from 142 over 92 to 128 over 83 in 1 month. By September, it was 101 over 75 without any medication. The prescriptions the doctor sent me are still in the envelopes. Chapter 2. A brief history of fasting. There is nothing new except what has been forgotten. Marie Antoinette. From an evolutionary standpoint, eating 3 meals a day and snacking throughout the day is not a requirement for survival or good health. Before the modern era, food availability was unpredictable and highly irregular. Drought, war, insect infestations, and disease all played a part in restricting food, sometimes to the point of starvation. So did the seasons. During the summer and fall, fruits and vegetables were plentiful, but during the winter and spring, they were scarce. Periods without food could last weeks or even months. There's a reason that one of the four horsemen of the apocalypse is famine. As human societies developed agriculture, these periods of famine were gradually reduced and eventually eliminated. However, ancient civilizations, like the Greeks, recognized there was something deeply, intrinsically beneficial to periodic fasting. As periods of involuntary starvation faded, ancient cultures replaced them with periods of voluntary fasting. These were often called times of cleansing, detoxification, or purification. The earliest recorded histories of ancient Greece show an unyielding belief in their power. Indeed, fasting is the most time-honored and widespread healing tradition in the world. It has been practiced by virtually every culture and every religion on earth. Fasting is an ancient, time-tested tradition. Spiritual fasting. Fasting is widely practiced for spiritual purposes and remains part of virtually every major religion in the world. Three of the most influential men in the history of the world, Jesus Christ, Buddha, and the Prophet Muhammad, all shared a common belief in the healing power of fasting. In spiritual terms, it is often called cleansing or purification, but practically, it amounts to the same thing. The practice of fasting developed independently among different religions and cultures, not as something that was harmful, but as something that was deeply, intrinsically beneficial to the human body and spirit. Fasting is not so much a treatment for illness, but a treatment for wellness. The regular application of fasting helps protect people from illness and keeps them feeling well. In the story of Adam and Eve, the only act that is prohibited in the Garden of Eden is to eat the fruit of one tree, and Eve is tempted by the serpent to betray this trust. Fasting is thus an act of turning away from temptation and back to God. In the Bible, Matthew 4:2 states, "Then Jesus was led by the Spirit into the wilderness to be tempted by the devil. After fasting 40 days and 40 nights, he was hungry." I'll mention here the interesting point that hunger often disappears during extended fasts, which has been noted throughout history. In the Christian tradition, fasting and prayer are often methods of cleansing and renewing the soul. Symbolically, believers empty their souls so that they may be ready to receive God. Fasting is not so much about self-denial, but about a reaching for spirituality and being able to commune with God and hear His voice. By fasting, you put your body under submission to the Holy Spirit, humble your soul before the presence of God, and prepare yourself to hear the voice of God. Fasting All-Stars, Abel James. For millions of people across the world, regular fasting is commonplace and has been part of spiritual practice for thousands of years. But before that, fasting was simply a way of life. With no storable grains and few other foods that stayed fresh for very long, most of our ancestors experienced both feast and famine on a regular basis. When game was scarce, seasons changed, or the pickings were slim, hunter-gatherers did without. Eating all the time is not normal. Greek Orthodox Christians may follow various fasts on 180 to 200 days of the year. Famous nutrition researcher Ansel Keys often considered Crete the poster child for the healthy Mediterranean diet. However, there was a critically important factor of their diet that he completely dismissed. Most of the population of Crete followed the Greek Orthodox tradition of fasting. This may have contributed to the healthy longevity of this population. Buddhist monks are known to abstain from eating after noon, fasting until the next morning. In addition, there may be water-only fasts for days or weeks on end. They fast to quench their human desires, which helps them rise above all desires in order to achieve nirvana and end all suffering. This fits with their core beliefs in moderation and austerity. Hinduism embraces fasting in the belief that our sins lessen as the body suffers. It is also seen as a method of cultivating control over desires and guiding the mind toward peace. The physical needs of the body are denied for spiritual gains. Certain days of the week are designated for fasting in Hinduism, as are certain days of the month. Fasting is also common at festivals. Traditional Ayurvedic medicine also ascribes the cause of many illnesses to the accumulation of toxins in the body and prescribes fasting to cleanse these toxins. Muslims fast from sunrise to sunset during the holy month of Ramadan. According to the Quran, the Prophet Muhammad said, "The month of Ramadan is a blessed month, a month in which Allah has made fasting obligatory." The Prophet Muhammad also encouraged fasting on Mondays and Thursdays. Ramadan is the best studied of the fasting periods, but it differs from many fasting protocols in that fluids are forbidden, which results in a period of mild dehydration. The early adopters. One early fasting advocate was Hippocrates of Cos, 460 to 370 BC. Widely considered the father of modern medicine. In his lifetime, people came to the realization that obesity was an evolving and serious disease. Hippocrates wrote, "Sudden death is more common in those who are naturally fat than in the lean." He advised that treatment for obesity should include exertion after meals and eating a high-fat diet, and he recommended that they should, moreover, eat only once a day. In other words, incorporating a daily 24-hour fast was even then recognized as highly beneficial in the treatment of obesity. Proving once again that Hippocrates is worthy of our reverence, he also recognized the benefits of physical exercise and eating plenty of healthy fats in a healthy lifestyle. The ancient Greek writer and historian Plutarch, 46 to 120 AD, echoed these sentiments. He wrote, "Instead of using medicine, better fast today." Renowned ancient Greek thinkers Plato and his student Aristotle were also staunch supporters of fasting. The ancient Greeks believed that medical treatments could be observed from nature, and since humans, like most animals, naturally avoid eating when they become sick, they believed fasting to be a natural remedy for illness. In fact, fasting can be considered an instinct, since all animals, dogs, cats, cattle, sheep, and also humans, avoid food when sick. Think about the last time you had the flu, or even a cold. The last thing you probably wanted to do was eat. So fasting can be considered a universal human instinct for handling multiple kinds of illnesses. It's truly ingrained in human heritage, and it's as old as mankind itself. The ancient Greeks also believed that fasting improved mental and cognitive abilities, and they recognized that they could solve problems and puzzles better during fasting. This is easy to understand. Think about the last time you ate a huge Thanksgiving meal. Did you feel more energetic and mentally alert afterwards? Or did you feel sleepy and a little dopey? Most of us feel sleepy. After a large meal, blood is shunted to your digestive system to cope with the huge influx of food, leaving less blood to go to the brain. The result? A food coma. Maybe a little nap. Now think about a time when you have not eaten for many hours. Do you remember being lethargic and mentally sluggish? Not likely. It is more likely you felt mentally sharp and completely attuned to your environment. This is not by accident. In Paleolithic times, we needed all our mental faculties and keen senses to find food. When food was scarce, our alertness and mental focus naturally increased. Other intellectual giants throughout history were also great proponents of fasting. Paracelsus, 1493 to 1541, a Swiss-German physician and the founder of toxicology, famously wrote, "The dose makes the poison." He critically observed nature and laid the groundwork for modern scientific methods. His discoveries revolutionized medicine. As a military surgeon, he rejected the old practices of applying cow dung to wounds and instead insisted they be kept clean and protected. He also objected to the common medical practice of bloodletting. Instead of following these common practices, he pioneered clinical diagnosis and application of specific treatments. A brilliant and transformative scientist, he also wrote, "Fasting is the greatest remedy, the physician within." Benjamin Franklin, 1706 to 1790, one of America's founding fathers, was world-renowned for his extensive knowledge in a wide range of areas. He was a leading scientist, inventor, diplomat, and author. Turning his genius to medicine, he once wrote, "The best of all medicines is resting and fasting." And finally, Mark Twain, 1835 to 1910, one of America's foremost writers and philosophers, was an advocate of fasting for health. He once wrote, "A little starvation can really do more for the average sick man than can the best medicines and the best doctors." Modern fasting. Interestingly, in the late 1800s and early 1900s, professional fasters would fast for entertainment. One fasted for 30 days and drank a quantity of his own urine. Talk about being starved for entertainment. Franz Kafka based his short story A Hunger Artist on the practice. The fad soon died out, never to be reborn. My guess is that watching someone not eat really is not that entertaining. Fasting began to appear in the medical literature in the early 1900s. In 1915, an article in the Journal of Biological Chemistry described fasting as a perfectly safe, harmless, and effective method for reducing the weight of those suffering from obesity. However, in a time rife with poverty, infectious diseases, and war, obesity was hardly the problem it is today. Severe food shortages were present during the two world wars and the intervening Great Depression. Treatments for obesity were not a priority. In the late 1950s, Dr. W. L. Bloom reignited interest in short-term fasting as a therapeutic measure, but longer periods were also well described in the literature. In a study published in 1968, Dr. I. C. Gilliland reported his experience with 46 patients whose reducing regimen started with a standard absolute fast for 14 days. After the late 1960s, interest in therapeutic fasting seemed to again fade, mostly because obesity was still not a major public health issue. Coronary heart disease was the major health concern of the time, and nutritional research focused on dietary fat and cholesterol. Commercial interests also became pervasive, and as you might guess, large food corporations will not support any intervention that threatens their existence. So fasting as an adjunct to diet started to fade. Despite the fact that fasting is low fat, as well as low everything else, it had almost entirely disappeared by the 1980s. Fasting All-Stars, Amy Berger. For most of human history, large amounts of food were not readily accessible all throughout the day. Intermittent fasting was likely a regular part of human evolution, and it's possible our bodies and brains have come to expect periods of food scarcity. Because we are blessed with abundant food all year round in the 21st century, we now have to make a special effort to impose food scarcity upon ourselves for therapeutic purposes. Despite its long traditions, advantages, and effectiveness, fasting as a therapeutic tool has been extinct for the last 30-plus years. Even its very mention tends to bring ridicule. But in truth, the idea is very straightforward. If metabolic diseases such as type 2 diabetes are caused by eating too much, then logically the solution is to eat little to balance it out. What could be simpler? Chapter 3. Busting the Myths of Fasting. Although fasting was widely practiced historically, most of us today grew up believing some fundamental myths about the dangers of fasting. They are repeated so often that they are often perceived as infallible truths. Some of the more common myths include, fasting puts you in starvation mode. Fasting makes you burn muscle. Fasting causes low blood sugar. Fasting results in overeating. Fasting deprives the body of nutrients. It's just crazy. Although they were long ago disproven, these myths still persist. Most people mistakenly believe fasting is detrimental to health. The truth is quite the opposite. There are a significant number of health benefits, as we'll explore in later chapters. But first, let's examine these myths. Myth number one, fasting puts you in starvation mode. Starvation mode is the mysterious boogeyman always raised to scare us away from missing even a single meal. Why is it so bad to skip a meal? Let's get some perspective here. Assuming we eat 3 meals per day, over 1 year, that's a little over 1,000 meals. To think that fasting for 1 day, skipping 3 meals of the 1,000, will somehow cause irreparable harm is simply absurd. The idea of starvation mode refers to the notion that our metabolism decreases severely and our bodies shut down in response to fasting. We can test this notion by looking at the basal metabolic rate, BMR, which measures the amount of energy that our body burns in order to function normally to keep the lungs breathing, brain functioning, heart pumping, kidneys, liver, and digestive system all working, and so on. Most of the calories we spend each day are not used for exercise, but for these basic functions. The BMR is not a fixed number, but actually increases or decreases up to 40% in response to many variables. For example, I never seemed to get cold as a teenager. Even skiing in negative 22 degrees Fahrenheit weather, I stayed warm. My BMR was high. I was burning a lot of calories to keep my body temperature up. As I've gotten older, I've noticed that I no longer endure the cold so well. I also eat far less than I did as a teenager. My BMR has gotten low, so I no longer burn as many calories on basic body functions. This is what most people mean when they say that metabolism slows down with age, and it contributes to the well-known tendency of older snowbirds from the Northeast and Canada to retire in warm places like Florida and Arizona. Daily caloric reduction has been well documented to cause a dramatic reduction in BMR. In studies with a baseline daily calorie consumption of approximately 2,500 calories per day, reducing calories consumed to approximately 1,500 calories a day for a long stretch of time will result in a 25-30% reduction in BMR. On the other hand, overfeeding studies where subjects are asked to deliberately eat more than they normally do causes an increase in BMR. Reduced metabolism makes us generally cold, tired, hungry, and less energetic. Our bodies are essentially conserving energy by not burning calories to keep us warm and moving. From a weight standpoint, reduced metabolism is a double curse. First, we feel lousy while dieting. Even worse, because we're burning fewer calories per day, it's both harder to lose weight and much easier to gain weight back after we've lost it. This is the main problem with most caloric reduction diets. Suppose you normally eat 2,000 calories a day and cut back to only 1,500. Your body cannot run a deficit indefinitely. It will eventually run out of fat to burn. So it plans ahead and decreases your energy expenditure. The end result is a decreased BMR. This has been proven repeatedly by experiments over the last century, and we'll talk about it in more detail in Chapter 5. Because of this well-known starvation mode effect of daily caloric restriction, many people assume that fasting will result in a similar but more severe decrease in BMR. Luckily, this does not happen. If short-term fasting dropped our metabolism, humans as a species would not likely have survived. Consider the situation of repeated feast-famine cycles. During long winters back in the Paleolithic era, there were many days where no food was available. After the first episode, you would be severely weakened as your metabolism falls. After several repeated episodes, you would be so weak that you would be unable to hunt or gather food, making you even weaker. This is a vicious cycle that the human species would not have survived. Our bodies do not shut down in response to short-term fasting. In fact, metabolism revs up, not down, during fasting. This makes sense from a survival standpoint. If we do not eat, our bodies use our stored energy as fuel so that we can find more food. Humans have not evolved to require 3 meals a day every day. When food intake goes to zero fasting, our body obviously cannot take BMR down to zero. We have to burn some calories just to stay alive. Instead, hormones allow the body to switch energy sources from food to body fat. After all, that is precisely why we carry body fat, to be used for food when no food is available. It's not there for looks. By feeding on our own fat, we significantly increase the availability of food, and this is matched by an increase in energy expenditure. Studies demonstrate this phenomenon clearly. In one, fasting every other day for 22 days resulted in no measurable decrease in BMR. There was no starvation mode. Fat oxidation, fat burning, increased 58% from 64 grams per day to 101 grams per day. Carbohydrate oxidation decreased 53% from 175 grams per day to 81 grams per day. This means that the body has started to switch over from burning sugar to burning fat with no overall drop in energy. In another study, 4 days of continuous fasting increased BMR by 12%. Levels of the neurotransmitter norepinephrine, also known as noradrenaline, which prepares the body for action, increased by 117%, keeping energy levels high. Fatty acids in the bloodstream increased over 370% as the body switched over from burning food to burning stored fats. Fasting All-Stars, Dr. Bert Herring. The fasting is unhealthy reflex is largely an outcome of the marketing push to encourage consumers to buy food. An enormous amount of advertising money is spent every year in an effort to convince consumers that at any moment that they are not consuming food, they are at risk for underperforming. The Snickers campaign launched in 2015 offers a perfect example. Candy bars labeled with words sleepy, grouchy, impatient, etc., hinted that these undesirable conditions were best overcome by consuming food, essentially claiming psychoactive effects for the candy bar. We'll explore how the body stores energy and accesses it in more detail in Chapter 5. But for now, just know that we're designed to function well during periods of fasting. Our bodies don't start to shut down or go into starvation mode. Myth number 2. Fasting makes you burn muscle. One persistent myth of fasting is that it burns muscle, that our body, if we're not eating, will immediately start using our muscles as an energy source. This does not actually happen. The human body evolved to survive periods of fasting. We store food energy as body fat and use this as fuel when food is not available. Muscle, on the other hand, is preserved until body fat becomes so low that the body has no choice but to turn to muscle. This will only happen when body fat is at less than 4%. For comparison, elite male marathon runners carry approximately 8% body fat, and female marathoners slightly more. If we did not preserve muscle and burn fat instead when no food is available, we would not have survived very long as a species. Almost all mammals have this same ability. Real-world studies of fasting show that the concern over muscle loss is largely misplaced. Alternate day fasting over 70 days decreased body weight by 6%, but fat mass decreased by 11.4%, and lean mass, muscle, and bone did not change at all. At baseline, eating normally, energy comes from a mix of carbohydrates, fat, and protein. As you start fasting, the body increases carbohydrate oxidation. This is just a fancy way of saying that it is burning sugar in the form of glycogen for the first 24 to 48 hours after you stop eating until it runs out of glycogen. With no more sugar to burn, the body switches to burning fat. Fat oxidation increases as carbohydrate oxidation decreases toward zero. At the same time, protein oxidation, that is, burning protein such as muscle for fuel, actually decreases. The normal protein breakdown of around 75 grams per day falls to 15 to 20 grams per day during fasting. Rather than burning muscle during fasting, we start conserving muscle. Much of the amino acids that are broken down during regular turnover of cells are reabsorbed into new proteins. Fasting All-Stars, Abel James. Running just on the fat stored in their bodies, most Americans could walk from New York to Florida without technically needing a bite to eat. After all, why would your body store excess energy as fat if it meant to burn protein as soon as the chips were down? Muscles and other proteins are functional tissues and have many purposes. They are not designed to store energy. Glycogen and fat are. To burn muscle for energy would be like storing firewood and then, as soon as cold weather hits, chopping up your sofa and throwing it into the fire. In fact, fasting is one of the most potent stimuli for growth hormone secretion, and increased growth hormone helps maintain lean body mass. In studies that used drugs to suppress growth hormone in fasted subjects, there was a 50% increase in protein oxidation. Muscle gain or loss is mostly a function of exercise. You can't eat your way to more muscle. Supplement companies, of course, try to convince you otherwise. Taking creatine and drinking whey protein shakes do not build muscle. That's wishful thinking. Exercise is the only reliable way to build muscle. If you are worried about muscle loss, exercise more. It's not rocket science. Diet and exercise are two entirely separate issues. Don't confuse the two. Don't worry about what your diet or lack of diet, that is, fasting, is doing to your muscle mass. Exercise builds muscle. Lack of exercise leads to atrophy of muscles. On the other hand, if you are worried about weight loss and type 2 diabetes, then you need to worry about diet, not exercise. You can't outrun a bad diet. So let me lay it out as simply as I can. Body fat is, at its core, stored energy for us to eat when there is no food. It's not there for looks, right? So when we fast, we eat our own fat. This is natural. This is normal. This is the way we were designed. Otherwise, famine cycles in Paleolithic times would have eventually left us as a ball of 100% fat. During fasting, hormonal changes kick in to give us more energy, increased adrenaline, and preserve our lean muscles and bones, increased growth hormone. This is normal and natural, and there is nothing here to be feared. Myth number 3. Fasting causes low blood sugar. Sometimes people worry that blood sugar will fall very low during fasting, and they will become shaky and sweaty. Luckily, this does not actually happen. Blood sugar level is tightly monitored by the body, and there are multiple mechanisms to keep it in the proper range. During fasting, our body begins by breaking down glycogen. Remember, that's the glucose in short-term storage in the liver to provide glucose. This happens every night as you sleep to keep blood sugars normal as you fast overnight. Fasting All-Stars, Amy Berger. People who engage in fasting for religious or spiritual purposes often report feelings of extreme clear-headedness and physical and emotional well-being. Some even feel a sense of euphoria. They usually attribute this to achieving some kind of spiritual enlightenment, but the truth is much more down-to-earth and scientific than that. It's the ketones. Ketones are a superfood for the brain. When the body and brain are fueled primarily by fatty acids and ketones, respectively, the brain fog, mood swings, and emotional instability that are caused by wild fluctuations in blood sugar become a thing of the past, and clear thinking is the new normal. If you fast for longer than 24 to 36 hours, glycogen stores become depleted. The liver now can manufacture new glucose in a process called gluconeogenesis, using the glycerol that's a byproduct of the breakdown of fat. This means that we do not need to eat glucose for our blood glucose levels to remain normal. A related myth is that the brain cells can only use glucose for energy. This is incorrect. Human brains, unique amongst animals, can also use ketone bodies, particles that are produced when fat is metabolized, as a fuel source. This allows us to function optimally even when food is not readily available. Ketones provide the majority of the energy we need. Consider the consequences if glucose were absolutely necessary for brain function. After 24 hours without food, glucose stored in our bodies in the form of glycogen is depleted. At that point, we'd become blubbering idiots as our brain shut down. In the Paleolithic era, our intellect was our only advantage against wild animals with their sharp claws, sharp fangs, and bulging muscles. Without it, humans would have become extinct long ago. When glucose is not available, the body begins to burn fat and produce ketone bodies, which are able to cross the blood-brain barrier to feed the brain cells. Up to 75% of the brain's energy requirements can be met by ketones. Of course, that means that glucose still provides 25% of the brain's energy requirements. So does this mean that we have to eat for our brains to function? Not really. Between the glucose we have already stored away in the form of body fat and what the liver produces in gluconeogenesis, we have plenty of fuel when no food is available. Even prolonged fasting won't send blood glucose levels dangerously low. Fasting All-Stars, Mark Sisson. I have all the energy I need when I wake up in the morning and don't feel compelled to eat until I'm hungry around noon or 1 p.m. I maintain muscle mass and have discovered that I function optimally on fewer calories than I thought necessary. Myth number 4. Fasting results in overeating. Does fasting provoke compensatory overeating? Many authorities warn against missing even a single meal because it could make you extra hungry and unable to avoid temptations, leading to overeating and ultimately no weight loss. Studies of caloric intake do, in fact, show a slight increase on the first day after fasting. On the day after a one-day fast, average caloric intake increases from 2,436 to 2,914. But if you factor in what would have normally been consumed during that two-day period, 4,872 calories, there is still a net deficit of 1,958 calories. The increased calories don't come close to making up for the lack of calories on the fasting day. Interestingly, with repeated fasting, you may see the opposite effect. In the intensive dietary management clinic, my personal experience with hundreds of fasting patients shows that over time, appetite tends to decrease as the fasting duration increases. Myth number 5. Fasting deprives the body of nutrients. There are two main types of nutrients, micronutrients and macronutrients. Micronutrients are vitamins and minerals that are provided by the diet and are required for overall health. Macronutrients are proteins, fats, and carbohydrates. Micronutrient deficiency is rare in the developed world. With shorter fasting periods, less than 24 hours, there is ample opportunity before and after the fast to eat nutrient-dense foods to make up for missed meals. For longer fasts, it is a good idea to take a general multivitamin. The longest fast recorded lasted 382 days, and a simple multivitamin prevented any vitamin deficiencies. Of the three major macronutrients, there are no essential carbohydrates that the body needs to function, so it is impossible to become carbohydrate deficient. However, there are certain proteins and fats that we have to get in our diet. These are called the essential amino acids, the building blocks of proteins, and essential fatty acids. These cannot be manufactured by the body and must be obtained in the diet. The body normally loses both essential amino acids and essential fatty acids in urine and stool. During fasting, it reduces these losses to hang on to much of the necessary nutrients. Bowel movements usually decrease during fasting. Since no food is going into the stomach, there is less stool formation, and this helps to prevent loss of protein in the stool. Essential nutrients, particularly nitrogen, can be lost through the urine. Nitrogen in the urine is a sign of protein metabolism, and as protein metabolism decreases during fasting, nitrogen in the urine decreases significantly to almost negligible levels. To further preserve proteins, the body breaks old proteins down into their component amino acids and recycles these into new proteins. By keeping essential nutrients in the body instead of excreting them, the body is able to recycle many of them during fasting. Of course, no matter how good the body is at compensating, fasting means we're not consuming essential fatty acids and amino acids. Before and after fasting, it can be helpful to follow a low-carbohydrate diet, which increases the percentage of fats and proteins consumed so the body has more stored up for a rainy day. Children, pregnant women, and breastfeeding women have a greater need for nutrients than others. In these situations, recycling old proteins and fats isn't enough. New ones are needed to grow and build tissue. For these people, fasting is not a good option. Listen to Chapter 10 for more on who should not fast. Myth number 6. It's just crazy. This always seems to be the fallback position of those who can't think of any other reason why fasting should not be attempted. The science is clear. Obesity at its very core involves some form of overeating. This is true whether you believe it is caused by consuming too many calories, carbohydrates, or fats. Fasting helps in all these cases. Its effectiveness is unquestioned. After all, if you don't eat anything at all, don't you think you would lose weight? The only two remaining questions are, is it healthy? The answer to this is yes. We'll talk more about why in upcoming chapters. Can you do it? Absolutely. Millions of people worldwide have fasted for weight loss and many other reasons. This book is here to help get you started. Chapter 4. The Advantages of Fasting. Fasting's most obvious benefit is weight loss. However, there are a myriad of benefits beyond this, many of which were widely known before the modern era. It was once common for people to fast for a certain period of time for health benefits. These fasting periods were often called cleanses, detoxifications, or purifications, and people believed that they would clear their bodies of toxins and rejuvenate themselves. They were more correct than they knew. Fasting improves mental clarity and concentration. induces weight and body fat loss, lowers blood sugar levels, improves insulin sensitivity, increases energy, improves fat burning, lowers blood cholesterol, prevents Alzheimer's disease, extends life, reverses aging process, decreases inflammation. We'll talk more about these health benefits in later chapters. But why is fasting better than any other diets? We'll look at the advantages to fasting in this chapter. Diets fail. One main problem of the diets that have the health benefits I just listed is that these are often very difficult to follow, as I discovered when working with my patients with obesity and type 2 diabetes. Obesity and type 2 diabetes are both problems of excessive insulin. Since refined carbohydrates are a prime contributor to high insulin levels, the natural place to start with my patients was a low-carbohydrate diet. Protein, especially animal proteins, dairy, and meat, can also stimulate insulin production, and excessive intake of these foods can slow down progress. And processed foods also play a key role in disease. So the best diet would emphasize whole, unprocessed foods. It would be low in refined carbohydrates and high in natural fats with a moderate amount of protein. Multiple peer-reviewed studies have shown that kind of diet has excellent results for type 2 diabetes and is very safe. So that's what I started with in working with my patients at the Intensive Dietary Management Program. I counseled them on reducing sugars and refined carbohydrates and replacing them with natural, unprocessed foods. I gave lectures, I followed up, I begged, I cajoled, I reviewed page after page of food diaries, and it just did not work. The diet could be successful, but only if it was properly followed, and it was simply too complicated for many of my patients. They would return food diaries filled with noodles and bread and still claim they were following a low-carbohydrate diet. Pitas, naan, and other flatbreads somehow were not considered bread. They simply did not understand what was being asked of them. These were not, after all, people obsessed with nutrition who spent every spare minute reading medical journals. They had full-time jobs and families to take care of, and trying to break their dietary habits of the last 50 years proved to be very challenging. Also, because the diet was almost the opposite of conventional dietary advice, it was often hard for people to accept that it was actually good for them. But I couldn't just give up. Their health and indeed their very lives depended upon the proper treatment. Type 2 diabetes is a terrible disease. It is by far the leading cause of blindness, amputation, and kidney failure in North America. Diabetes is also a leading contributor to heart attacks, stroke, and other cardiovascular diseases. Type 2 diabetes is a dietary disease, and it requires a dietary solution. Most importantly, it is a curable disease. What I needed was a new strategy. The overall goal was not necessarily to reduce carbohydrate intake. The goal was to reduce insulin levels, and cutting carbohydrates was only one method of achieving that goal. Yet all foods, to varying degrees, stimulate the release of insulin. So the most efficient method of lowering insulin would be to eat nothing at all. In other words, to fast. I didn't need to reinvent the wheel. People are always drawn to the latest and greatest diet trend, the next superfood like quinoa, acai berries, and kale chips. But what are the chances that after thousands of years of human history, we will find the next great thing now? The thing that we can't live without, despite having lived without it for thousands of years. Fasting is the oldest dietary intervention in the world. It is profoundly different from all other dietary strategies. It is not the latest and greatest, but the tried and true. It is not something to do, but something to not do. Because it differs from conventional dieting in many important ways, fasting carries many distinct advantages. The greater the effectiveness, the greater the simplicity. The greater the simplicity, the greater the effectiveness. Advantage number one, it's simple. Because there is no consensus as to what constitutes a healthy diet, my patients were often confused. Should they go low fat, low carb, low calorie, low sugar, low glycemic index? Fasting by taking a completely different approach is much easier to understand. It is so simple that it can be explained in two sentences. Eat nothing, drink water, tea, coffee, or bone broth. That's it. Fasting All-Stars, Dr. Michael Ruscio. I initially became interested in fasting for its applications in healing the gut. Many of the patients I work with have severe food sensitivities, even though they have very healthy diets. For these patients, there is usually some underlying inflammatory or infectious issue. Fasting can provide instantaneous relief of symptoms and aids in supporting recovery from the underlying issue. Diets can fail because they are ineffective, but they just as surely fail if people are not able to follow them. The most obvious benefit to fasting is that its simplicity makes it effective. When it comes to dietary rules, the simpler, the better. Advantage number two, it's free. I prefer patients to eat organic, local grass-fed beef and organic vegetables and avoid white bread and other highly processed foods. However, the truth is that these kinds of healthy foods are often very expensive. They can cost 10 times as much as processed foods. Grains enjoy substantial government subsidies, making them far cheaper than other foods. This means that a pound of fresh cherries may cost $6.99, while an entire loaf of bread will cost $1.99. An entire box of pasta may cost only 99 cents on sale. Feeding a family on a budget is a lot easier when you buy pasta and white bread. If a diet is unaffordable, it does not truly matter if it is effective. The price makes it ineffective for those who cannot afford to follow it. This should not doom them to a lifetime of type 2 diabetes and disability. Fasting is free. In fact, not only is it free, it actually saves money because you do not need to buy any food at all. There are no expensive foods. There are no expensive supplements. There are no meal replacement bars, shakes, or medications. The price of fasting is zero. Advantage number three, it's convenient. It is healthy to always eat a home-cooked, prepared-from-scratch meal. However, many people, myself included, simply do not have the time or inclination to cook. Between work, school, family, kids, after-school activities, and after-work activities, there just is not a lot of time left over. Cooking involves preparation time, shopping time, cooking time, and cleanup time. Everything takes time, and time seems to be one commodity that's in constant shortage. The number of meals eaten away from home has been steadily increasing over the past few decades. While many try to support the slow food movement, it is clear that they are fighting a losing battle against fast food. So asking people to devote themselves to home cooking, as well-intentioned as it may be, is not going to be a winning strategy. Fasting, on the other hand, is the exact opposite. There is no time spent buying groceries, preparing ingredients, cooking, and cleaning up. It's a way to simplify your life. There is nothing easier than fasting, because fasting involves doing nothing. Most diets tell you what to do. Fasting tells you not to do anything. It doesn't get easier than that. Advantage number four, you can enjoy life's little pleasures. Some diets advise people to never, ever again eat ice cream or desserts. Good advice for weight loss, obviously, but I don't think it is actually very practical advice. Sure, you might be able to swear off desserts for 6 months or a year, but for life? And would you really want to? Think about it. Imagine the joy of savoring the cake and champagne at your best friend's wedding. Do we need to deny ourselves that little bit of pleasure forever? Enjoy a birthday salad instead of a birthday cake? Thanksgiving kale chips? All-you-can-eat Brussels sprouts? Yes, life just got a little less sparkly. Forever is a long time. Now, I am not saying that you should eat dessert every single day. However, fasting restores the ability to occasionally enjoy that dessert by balancing out the feast. It is, after all, the cycle of life. Feasts follow fasts. Fasts follow feasts. This is how we have always lived. Birthdays, weddings, holidays, and other special occasions have always, throughout human history, been celebrated with feasts. But those feasts should be followed by fasts. If you have a wedding coming up, you are more than entitled to look forward to enjoying yourself and eating decadent, delicious wedding cake. And when you fast regularly, you do not need to feel guilty about enjoying one of life's little pleasures because you can make up for it. The most important aspect of fasting is fitting it into your life. There will be times where it is not appropriate to fast. Who wants to forever be the party pooper who won't eat this and won't drink that? You can indulge yourself as long as you balance that with some abstinence. Fasting is really about balance. It is the flip side, the B side of eating. Balance the time that you are eating and the time you are not eating to remain healthy. When those two fall out of balance, that's when we get into trouble. Advantage number 5. It's powerful. Many type 2 diabetics are morbidly obese and highly insulin resistant. Occasionally, even a strict ketogenic diet, one that's very low in carbohydrate, moderate in protein, and high in fat, is not strong enough to reverse their disease. The quickest and most efficient way to lower insulin and insulin resistance is fasting. It has unrivaled power to break through weight loss plateaus and reduce the need for insulin. From a therapeutic standpoint, a key advantage of fasting is that it has no upper limit. There's no maximum amount of time that you can fast. The world record for fasting was 382 days, during which the patient suffered no ill effects. So if fasting occasionally isn't working, all you need to do is increase the frequency or length of time you fast until you reach your goal. Compare this to medications. Virtually every drug has a maximum dose. If you take penicillin for an infection, for example, there is a maximum dose above which there is little extra benefit and the medication may become toxic. At that point, if you still have the infection, you need to change medications. The same applies to low-carbohydrate or low-fat diets. Once you hit zero carbs or fat, you can go no further with that diet. There is a maximum dose. Once you reach the maximum, you need to change diets to gain any extra effect. Fasting All-Stars, Dr. Bert Haring. The summary benefits of a successful fasting schedule maintained over a month or more include appetite correction, loss of surplus fat, decreased inflammation measured in symptom severity or C-reactive protein, CRP, decreased blood sugars in diabetics measured by blood glucose or HbA1c, and decreased blood pressure in hypertensive people. Fasting, unlimited power. Fasting has no ceiling, which offers significant therapeutic flexibility. In other words, you can keep fasting until the desired effects are seen. The dose can go up indefinitely. Ask yourself this question. If you don't eat, will you lose weight? Of course. Even a child understands that you must lose weight. So fasting's efficacy is unquestioned. It is the most powerful method of weight loss available. It is only a question of safety and compliance. For more complicated or serious cases of obesity, we can simply increase the dose. What's more, low-fat diets, low-carbohydrate diets, paleo diets, and indeed almost any diet work for some people, but not others. And when a diet doesn't work for you, there is little you can do to make it more effective. However, with fasting, all you need to do is increase the amount of time spent fasting. The longer you go, the more likely you are to lose weight. And it will happen eventually. Advantage number 6. It's flexible. Some diet plans advocate eating as soon as you wake up and then every 2.5 hours during the day. Some people have had good results with such a diet. However, finding or packing something to eat 6 or 7 or 8 times a day is very intrusive. I could not imagine interrupting my life every 2.5 hours to snack. It's too disruptive on an already hectic schedule, and it's simply not necessary. Fasting can be done at any time. There is no set duration. You may fast for 16 hours or 16 days. You can mix and match time periods. You are never locked into a pattern. You may fast for 1 day this week, 5 days the next, and 2 days the week after. Life is unpredictable. Fasting fits wherever you need it to. Fasting can be done anywhere. It does not matter if you live in the United States, the United Kingdom, or the United Arab Emirates. You may live in the polar desert of the Arctic or the sandy desert of Saudi Arabia. It matters not at all. Once again, because fasting is about not doing something, it simplifies our life. It adds simplicity where other diets add complexity. If you do not feel well for any reason, you simply stop fasting. It is entirely reversible within minutes. If you wish to stop fasting for several weeks for personal or medical reasons, then you may do so. If you want to indulge during the Christmas holidays or during a summer cruise, you can do that as well. Simply get back on the program once you are finished. Compare this to bariatric surgery, sometimes called stomach stapling. It has helped many people lose a lot of weight, at least in the short term. But this surgery has tons of complications, almost all of which are irreversible. And you can't simply reverse the surgery itself. It's permanent. If you are doing poorly, that's simply too bad. Fasting, on the other hand, is completely within your control. You may fast or stop fasting anytime you wish. Advantage number 7. It works with any diet. Here is the biggest advantage of all. Fasting can be added to any diet. That is because fasting is not about something you do, it's about something you do not do. It is subtraction rather than addition. This makes fasting fundamentally different from almost every diet imaginable. You don't eat meat,